and WBAI are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmid is brilliant, and Arpo Martin brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Dustbin of History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. And what have we got this morning? Well, pretty much a similar lineup to most weeks. We have a lost episode of Gene Shepherd from an eBay reel that I purchased last year. Not available anywhere else but right here in the old dustbin, because it's time now for our weekly lost, never-before-rebroadcast episode of Gene Shepherd. And like last week, a program that was on a reel I picked up on eBay last April. This one about gypsies, you'll forgive the expression. Con games, but mostly a group of traveling swindlers called the Williamsons. Their annual meeting in Cincinnati. Bus you there, Charlie? Gene Shepherd from Friday, May 28th, 1971. Gypsies and Con Games to wrap up this edition of the Dustbin of History here on WBAI New York.
Philosophical-type program devoted to saluting, once again, excellence in all of its many forms. The rest of the
wear my shades when I do this, do you? Now, this, you're part of an experiment here tonight. I hope that, none of you panic. I hope you don't panic. You know, experiments can be tricky one way or the other. And we're attempting to break through another barrier. As you know, that all kinds of barriers have been broken down in the movie world. Many barriers, philosophical and otherwise, have been broken down in the world of the Broadway stage. You've all heard of Old Calcutta, so on. Well, tonight's program is being performed entirely in the nude. And if it embarrasses some of you, I would like to suggest that you just know where you can go and you know what you can do. Bring it on, they're big. Come on, let's go, Ben. Fast, let's go. That's all right. Sir, you notice any difference? Yeah, I mean, do you feel any different now? I mean, has your attitude changed towards the show at all? I mean, knowing that it's being performed totally in the nude. You ought to see our engineer. It's just great. Fantastic show. Before we go any further with tonight's effort, I would like to... salute the Williamsons. I mean, you know, from time to time, this show takes the opportunity to salute people of high achievement in various fields. Have you ever heard of the Williamsons? Well, there was a great story in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago about the terrible Williamsons, and it was by George Vexey, and he's a writer for the Times. And in case you missed this, I'm going to take the liberty to quote from this piece so that you know that the excellence is possible in fields that are not generally related to it, or at least related in the mind to it. The title of the piece is Cincinnati Merchants Await Annual Visit of Terrible Williamsons, a clan of wandering gyp artists. A clan of wandering gyp artists. Hey, I'd like to ask you a question here. Do you mind if I ask a question? Who in the comic strips is responsible for the phrase raggle-taggle gypsy varmints? Who is always referring to raggle-taggle gypsy varmints? Now, come on, think, for crying out loud. What kind of an American are you? And I hate to see people losing their heritage and their culture. It's slipping right out of them. Well, there's hardly one alive here today who couldn't tell me who it was who always said... Glorioski. Who was it who always referred to a rather enigmatic entity entitled Notary Sojak? What's the matter with you guys? But all you can think of is Snoopy. Let's see, you know. Whose name in the comics, whose name refers to a common sport? His name refers to a common sport. A sport which, incidentally, is quite a bit in the news these days here in New York City due to the opening of several city offices around town. Come on. Think of the names of some comic strip characters. I'm talking about contemporary now comic strip characters. In fact, this guy is one of my favorites. Have you ever heard of Andy Gap? Well, what do you think his name says? Say it. That's the Cockney of Andy Gap. He's continually going down and putting a fiver down at the bookie. You mean you didn't know that that's what his name referred to? Sure, Andy Capp's name refers to the fact that he's a fanatical bettor. And, well, he drinks too, but bettors and drinkers generally are the same guy. I mean, it's very rare to find a guy who's who spends much time handicapping the horses, who doesn't hoist a few now and again. They seem to go in the tandem. But Andy Capp is the Cockney for handicap. Andy Capp. So maybe it's that it's quite obvious that I have much more of a scholarly mind than the klutzes that I live with around here. Now, come on, who was it who said raggle-taggle gypsy varmin? All right, forget it. You guys, you got no background. No wonder I can't communicate with you. Here's what George Vexey says about the Cincinnati merchants await annual visit of Terrible Williamsons, a clan of wandering gyp artists. Cincinnati. The Terrible Williamsons are due back any day now, as regular as springtime, and some merchants here can hardly wait. Every year, just about the time, late May, early June, around Memorial Day, the Williamsons return to town, Cincinnati, peeling off $100 bills to pay for their Cadillacs and their stocks and their funerals. The Williamsons are gyp artists, an inbred clan of about 2,000. It's a regular family that fleeces people all over the country. That is why police have labeled them terrible. They're called the Terrible Williamsons. They will blacktop your driveway, trim your trees, sell you Irish linen, then speed across the county line before you realize you've been taken. Find the flaws. But the family does very little business when it visits Cincinnati every spring, according to the police. Some drive new cars and stay in motels. Others drive new campers and stay in trailer lots. Some are named Stewart or McDonald or Reed rather than Williamson. They've got a whole variety of names. And Cincinnati is as much of the home as they have. You know, it's like it's the place where they circle around, and it's where they have their burial ground. Why Cincinnati? Well, do you know anything about Cincinnati, any of you, really? You know, I really talked about some of the cities I've actually lived in, but Cincinnati has to be one of the most interesting cities in the United States. In fact, and this is not because, let's face it, I don't live in Cincinnati, and I'm not a Cincinnatian, but I did work in Cincinnati, and I was there long enough to get some knowledge of the place and feel about it. Do you recall a book? You probably heard a book called Inside USA, famous book by John Gunther. Well, he listed in his book, in a famous chapter on cities of the United States, he listed what he would consider the 10 most cosmopolitan and interesting cities in the states. And would you believe that Cincinnati was listed well ahead of San Francisco? And there's a reason for it. Cincinnati is an interesting city. Well, it doesn't get that kind of publicity. See, we're very publicity-conscious people here in this country, and they don't even know it. Most people will talk about San Francisco, never been there, They just assume, because they've heard a lot about it, that it must be unbelievable. See, so that's the end of it. And we're saturated with publicity, and it really affects our minds. So if you don't hear about a thing, you assume, well, it can't be very good. Just can't be good. If you don't see it on the Dick Cavett show, it can't be a very funny comic if he's not on the Dick Cavett show or on the Ed Sullivan show. So this is all part of publicity. Publicity is a very subtle thing, and so this is why. No matter who, the big time, almost any, even little time performers hire guys who see to it that their name is mentioned continually in little columns. Continually. They're in a meaningless mention. But the name is repeated over and over and over again. And you see these names constantly. Quotes being given to them. Morty says, the other night in the Ding Dong Club, Morty said, and it's in the Earl Wilson column. Well, of course, these are called column plants. And whether he said it or not is immaterial. The fact is that it was, you know, sent in by some PR guy and a whole system of plants. And so the name is repeated over and over again. Now, most people have never heard much about Cincinnati. The name is not said much. And yet Cincinnati is a curious city. It's curious. Maybe that's one of the reasons why it is curious. It's a barely known city. And it's right on the edge of the South. Cincinnati cannot be called a northern city, nor can it be called a southern city. It can't be called a western city, and yet you certainly can't consider it east. It's an odd location geographically. You know where it is, don't you? Any of you know where it is? A lot of people don't even know what state it's in. Yes, it is in Ohio. But Ohio is one of those strange states that has two separate and distinct identities and philosophies. But northern Ohio is as remote from southern Ohio as, let's say, New York City is from Murmansk. They're very, very separate operations. And so you go to a place, a city like Cleveland, which is up in the northern part of the state, or Toledo or Youngstown, and there's no relationship at all to Cincinnati, which is in the far southern tip. Cincinnati is way down at the bottom of Ohio. And in fact, it's just across the river from Kentucky. And it's just a few miles down the river. If you go a few miles one way on the river, you're in Indiana, the far southern part of Indiana. You go a few miles the other side of the river, you know, go up a little bit, and you're in West Virginia. And they're very close to Louisville. They're about 60, 70, 80 miles from Louisville. They're about 60 miles north of Lexington. Now, these are cities you always associate with the South. You think of the bluegrass and all that. Well, Cincinnati is physically a beautiful city. It's laying right on the Ohio River. And this is the city, you know, where they have a steamboat tradition. You know, the steamboat tradition is the paddle wheel tradition is really greater in Cincinnati than in many of the cities along the Mississippi where the steamboat is generally, you associate them with the steamboats. But the steamboats in Cincinnati have been sort of deeply involved. In fact, I think some of the last really operating steamboats work out of Cincinnati. But anyway, here's this city there. And the reason the Williamsons hang around there is because of that. This is WOR in New York, by the way. This is not Cincinnati.
Palisades has a ride. Palisades has a ride.
Hello there. Hello there. Hello. Test 1, 2, 3. Hello there, you old fun seeker, you. Here's a suggestion. Why don't you swim in the world's largest outdoor saltwater pool, huh? It's called the Atlantic Ocean Palisades Amusement Park. At Palisades, there are over 200 exciting rides and super attractions, Dad, plus a million new lights and a glorious new color scheme. In a world of spiraling costs, Palisades remains an oasis of family fun at sensible prices. So Palisades is right there already. And by the way, this is the last year. So if you want to make the Palisades scene, you better do it quick, friend. There's always free parking, and Palisades also features the world's largest kiddie park. So whatever your pleasure, be it the rides, the pool, the attractions, or just, you know, walking around picking your teeth, or just the wonderful, fun-filled atmosphere of the park itself, come on over! What it says here, it says, do this with pizzazz. Come on over! Come on over! Guy that just went over to shoots there. Listen, I tell you, I'm a total ding dong when it comes to rides. You know, I have a love hate relationship to those rides. Don't you? I'm talking about things like the roller coaster. On the one hand, you want to go on them. On the other hand,
This message, sponsored by the United States Army.
Looking around, people are grooving, everyone's moving, while I'm standing still. I gotta start, put it together, but I don't know whether I ever will.
You can really get it together in today's Army. Today's Army wants to join you. For the location of your nearest Army representative, call 800-243-6000 toll-free.
It says, why Cincinnati? Well, it's a crossroads city between east and west and north and south. A pleasant place for wandering hustlers to plan their routes and to replenish their supplies and to bury their dead. It's the way Sarasota is the circus city. You know, all circus people go to Sarasota. That's exactly the same way that that Cincinnati is the hustler city. The crossroads, the national hustlers. What's the ice skating city? And if you were an old ice skater, let's say you skated with the Ice Follies, what's the capital of ice skating in the United States? Do you know? And they even have that skaters have their own little paper? And I'm talking about professional skaters, people who skate with the ice shows and all that, and they all know each other. It's a little tight enclave. That one time I was going with a girl that was an international gold medal winner, ice skater, and a famous skater with a lot of the shows. And I got to know about this curious world. Where is it? Minneapolis. All right, I'll ask you another one now. Do you know that there's a world capital, or at least the United States capital, of retired deep sea divers? And they all go down there to live when they're retired, you know. That's a tough thing, being a deep sea diver. Where's that? Well, that's Miami. It's deep sea divers all go down to live in that area. You can see that because I suppose, you know, it's the idea of the sea and all that, but not necessarily. There's a lot of other cities that sea is involved in. Why Miami? Well, it's just a thing that they somehow, that tradition started years ago, and that's where they go. Now, where do retired Air Force officers live? Many, many of them. Well, they have a world capital of retired Air Force officers. And it ain't in the South. Surprise you. Because most people think of retiree, you go South. No, not at all. I'm talking about specific cities. Why? Well, it happens to be Colorado Springs. Now, isn't that curious? So they all sort of congregate there, you know. But this Cincinnati is the city for the national hustlers. And whenever you're a hustler, you know, you go there to bury your cousin and you replenish your supplies. And listen to this. The Williamsons used to keep their bodies, I mean people who died in their clan, in storage, cold storage, until the clan could assemble on Memorial Day for a common service in Cincinnati. But fast cars and interstate highways have now made it easier to hold funerals all year round, but the family still congregates in Cincinnati, has its yearly get-together, its yearly reunion, in late May. The cemeteries and funeral homes tend to be discreet about such steady customers, perhaps recalling the automobile dealer who used to sell dozens of new models every May to the Williamsons until publicity scared the Williamsons to another dealer. Security is heavy at a Williamson funeral, with admittance gained only by reciting the clan password in a Scottish brogue. But one observer counted 125 new, brand spanking new, expensive cars at a recent funeral. Most of the funerals used to be held at Spring Grove Cemetery on the north side of town in Cincinnati, where the family owns at least 25 big plots and has buried 60 relatives, usually beneath large granite red tombstones. At Highland Cemetery across the river in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, a suburb of Covington, at least 8 plots are owned by people named Williamson. Stewarts are even more numerous. Not all the Williamsons or Stewarts interred there are related to the clan, but an employee said most of them, quote, were people in the same repair business, they refer to themselves as. Now, this is something that... Now, immediately you're thinking of gypsies. People say, well, they must be gypsies. Well, listen to this now. The Williamsons are not the traditional Latin or Eastern European gypsies. They are descendants of Robert Logan Williamson, who emigrated from Scotland to Brooklyn in the early 1890s and soon sent for his relatives. Marriage and intermarriage, owned homes and children rarely attended... Marriage and intermarriage, owned homes, that's a misprint. And the children rarely attended school when they all gathered over here. Their parents taught them what they thought was necessary to carry on the family's great tradition of hanky-panky. A few unrelated clans grew up, such as the Johns of the Southwest. But the police include such groups with the Williamsons, making the name... That is a name now that's a generic term for an itinerant hustler, a Williamson. Did you ever know anything about this, Ben? I didn't. It says the clan has 8 or 10 family names and a limited number of given names. Reportedly, they use these merely to confuse the police. Among the common names are Jean, Catherine, Isaac, John, George. Their nicknames are more exotic. The family leaders at one time were reported to be Isaac Two Thumbs Williamson and his wife, Jenny Black Queen Williamson. Their sons were nicknamed Gopher, Gooseneck, and Texas. Occasionally, the families will quarrel over territory, and their names will flood a police blotter, as when George Williamson killed Cotton Williamson with an ice pick in Oklahoma City a generation ago. George was sentenced to 2 years. But most of their deeds are not violent, and many of them are not even exactly crimes. Until you get something in writing, it's very tough to indict these people, said a detective of the crime division of the Cincinnati Police Department. And most people, once they're swindled, don't want to testify. We used to tell the family to get out of town till the Civil Rights Bill made that impossible. Now they're running wild. In a classic Williamson maneuver, here's what they will do. A few of the men will drive up to a house in a tank truck. They have just resurfaced somebody's driveway, they claim. And they would hate to waste the leftover blacktop. They offer to resurface your driveway for a bargain. And, of course, the homeowner bites and accepts. You know, after all, they were going to throw away all that blacktop, and they don't want to throw it away, so they'll just do it cheap, see? So he says, okay. Later, like, say, the next day, when the rain comes down and washes the gunk off the driveway, the swindled house owner realizes that the blacktop which he bought was used crankcase oil. The women also contribute to the family fortune. An attractive Williamson woman can tell an unbelievably sad story of having to sell her dead mother's valuable linen to buy milk for her baby, who was conveniently seen bawling in her arms. Many a tender-hearted woman has bought worthless material as a result of this fantastically successful routine. Usually the Williamsons escape. If they're arrested, they jump bail. They always jump bail, and they chalk it up as their standard operating expense. You know, if they're on $1,000 bail, they split. Well, you know, they take it off their income tax. They often hire reputable and expensive lawyers. Some, but few only, have served time and then caught up with the family later. It's tough to keep after him, said George Young, president of the Cincinnati Better Business Bureau, who has spent much of his adult life keeping tabs on this clan. He's the Sherlock Holmes, you know. He's a great clan of the Williamsons. He says, they keep moving, Mr. Young said. You try to keep the public aware, but there's always another fool. He said, Barnum was wrong. There's probably 50 born a minute. While the police, say that the family has not worked in Cincinnati for several years, a few retired members reportedly live in Cincinnati year-round, going to the races, betting on horses they own, or visiting their stockbroker. They got a reputation for being good at the stock market, said a woman who grew up in the same neighborhood as the Williamsons and later worked as their stockbroker. People would follow whatever a Williamson bought, would follow their moves so closely that they would wait until 5 minutes to three before buying or selling, she added. Williamsons were considered sharp dealers. They did all their transaction with cash, in $100 bills only. I saw him buy 12 Cadillacs one day, 12 one day, and 10 mink coats, all within an hour. And they paid in $100 bills, cash money. They once gave me a beautiful watch, the woman continued. It was the nicest thing I ever owned. It still works to this day. Probably paid for it in $100 bills. Now, there's the Williamson family. I wonder, you know, it's possible that one of them is listening to me tonight, driving along in his new caddy. You know, with his $700 watch, pocket full of $100 bills, and he's got a load of new Irish linen that he's about to sell in Trenton. And here's a picture. They have a picture of the only photograph that was taken of a Williamson in action. And it's Davina McDonald, only member of the Klan to be photographed in action. In the picture, she is seen selling a rug claimed to have been hand-woven by Italian exchange students. Rug actually was a cheap machine-made product. Look at her. Well, now, you know, I guess city people, I mean, people who live in a big city like New York, rarely run into this kind of thing. But it was funny. When I was a kid, did you ever see a Klan of gypsies? You mean you've never really seen them? I mean, actually seen a Klan of gypsies, not just a couple of gypsies walking around. Well, in a lot of towns, now this is something I'm going to, of course, I'm going to get 1,000 letters from people, you know, making arguments one way or the other, but I can only draw on what I know about it and the memories that I have of it. Well, I'll tell you what I can remember about it. And in the town, we lived in a suburban town in northern Indiana. And usually it was springtime. It's strange enough, I can remember it's always springtime, that we had a place like a campgrounds outside of town. It was like a forest preserve. In fact, you know, it's the kind of place where you go camping, and it was like a public park, public place like that. And about this time of the year, suddenly, this great group of people, and you'd see them driving down the street. They would drive right past in about 50 different cars, and they would be towing trailers in a great mob, just tremendous, like an organization. And the trailers are covered with all kinds of stuff, like there's pots hanging on the outside, and there's once in a while you'd see a motorcycle strapped at the top of the thing, or maybe they'd have a boat or something like that. Anyway, there's a whole collection of these things, and they would park down at this place. They would just like take over the campgrounds for a while. Maybe they would rent a vacant lot if some farmer had a big section of ground out in some place, out on the road somewhere. They'd simply park there, rent this place, and they would stay there. Oh, it seemed like maybe 2 weeks. Just covered with them. And within a very short time, what would happen then would all around the various areas around here, it would happen in our house, suddenly door-to-door salesmen appear. And they simply knock on the door, and they've always got an unbelievable deal. Like a guy knocks, and he's not selling stuff like Avon or anything like that. The door opens, you know, you open the door, and the guy's he looks very legitimate. These guys wear legitimate-looking suits, and they look just like anybody else. You know, they look like little like Madison Avenue guy. They're not the romantic gypsy that you think of. You think of people with the, you know, with the rings in their ears and all that jazz. Now, they're knocking a door, and the door opens. He says, "Madam, I'm representing the International Chicanery Corporation, and I'm a watch salesman, and I'm in trouble here in town. You see, the problem is that I lost my account book, and I have to raise some cash very quickly due to the fact that I don't have any checks that I can sign right now, and I'm right down here at the station, right down here. And I'm supposed to catch the 7:10. And I have a brand new bullable watch here, which I'm willing to sell only this afternoon because I really need the money. And I hope you don't misunderstand that I'm legitimate here. Here's my credentials." And he takes this thing out. It says International Chicanery Corporation. It's got a gold seal on it. And he says, "I have this watch here, and I'm selling it for $15. And actually, this is roughly a third of what it cost us, but they'll write it off because I needed the money and the cash, and we need it right now, and they don't have time to wire the money, and I have to be in Chicago by 2:00 tomorrow afternoon. So if you'd care to, you call your husband, ask him, you know, it's all right with me." Well, of course, if a guy shows up and knocks on your door, and he looks very legitimate, and he offers you a brand new Bulova watch, and it comes in a box, and the whole thing looks very official, see? And it's got a guarantee and everything with it. It's brand new. He said, "We deal in Bulova watches, and it's just $15. Or it can be any kind of watch. Usually it's a great name. You know, it's like Wittenauer or something like that. Well, a lot of people are going to quickly buy one of these. It's the one thing I want you to do, though, remember, because you're buying this, that this is a cost-controlled item, and we don't want to get back to the Bulova people that we sold one of their watches for $15, and then we may lose our franchise. So please don't say anything about it to anybody. And, of course, when you feel that you're doing something under the counter, really under the counter, you know, you feel, oh, groovy, see? So the guy buys the watch. Well, it looks like it is a Bulova. It's got a Bulova case. And he goes down, and he may even sneaky, you know, the check. He may go down, and he's on there. It says, Bulova Kluberman model or something like that, see? So he goes down to the jewelry store, and he says, hey, excuse me, what is a Bulova so-and-so worth? And I said, well, that's $146.95. Very interesting. Can I see one? The guy shows him one. Looks exactly like his watch. And he walks out, and then he's walking higher than a kite, see? Well, about 3 or 4 days later, all of a sudden, he notices his watch is 37 minutes slow. So he sets it again. And an hour and a half later, it's lost 12 minutes already. So he sets it again. And 2 days later, it's running 4 days late. He can't figure it out, see? Either that or the hands keep going round and round like, you know, like birds. So he says, I think I'll take my watch down and have him repair it, see? So he takes it down to some place. And, you know, repair shop, he walks in, he says to the guy, I got this Bulova watch, and I'd like you to take a look at it, see? Now, I'm just using the word Bulova. It couldn't be any watch company, you know, because they use famous names, good watches, recognizably good watches. It can be a Hamilton, it can be any great watch, Omega, it can be all the great watches, see? And so the watch repair guy, he takes the back of the watch off, and he says, where'd you get this watch? And, well, I got it for my birthday. Yes, it was going to be as a gift, yes. I'm sorry, fella. This watch has got cardboard works in it. I mean, this is not. It's just a Bulova case. I know this is about a... Oh, these works, you can get these works like 10 for a dollar. These are the kind of works they put in the little Mickey Mouse watches, you know. He said, you can't fix this watch. And bump, ba-dum, bump. And, of course, there you go. You know, of course, this is a big problem today, don't you? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I wonder how many guys... Yes, it is. Now, that is not only done with those things. Now, I'll tell you another flim-flam you got to be careful of. Guys on the streets selling transistor radios. Yeah, they're all over. Now, you're going to say to yourself, well, what do you mean? What can they do to a transistor radio? Well, I'm going to tell you what they can do to a transistor radio, friends. That it's very easy. In fact, there are factories all over the lot, particularly in places like Hong Kong and that turn this out. Now, here's what they do. They get a case that looks almost exactly like, say, a reputable and looks like a really good transistor radio. Let's say a Sony or a Panasonic or a Zenith, something like that. You know, it's a recognizable radio. And they make a case that is a very close approximation, at least from looks, to a set of that type. Usually a big one. They like to sell big ones, see. The set looks big. And most people associate in their minds bigness with quality. If you get a big transistor, a big one, see. With a lot of bands. They love to put a lot of bands on them. So the bands, different things. You can get shortwave. You can get broadcast. You can get FM. You can get AM. You can get weather broadcast. You can get Mars. You can monitor the satellites. You can do it all on this radio, see? And they put it on the dial. So the guy looks at it. Oh, wow. You know, it's got 10 or 50 different colored bands on it. And it's got a switch. It says band 1, band 2, shortwave, FM, ding-dong, air control tower. It's got it all on there, see? Well, actually, what does it consist of? Well, I'll tell you what they do. You're probably aware that you can get little transistor tuners. Just a little flat transistor tuner. It's got, you know, they're made by the millions. And they even give them away as prizes. You go up and down these 6th Avenue places, and you get little transistor radios for $3.10. You've seen these little radios. Well, if you take that little works out, the little transistor radio, it's a cheapy little radio, and you stick it into a big case, which is sealed in the back. The guy, he doesn't open it up, see, and it's got all kinds of packing to make it look like it's really official, see. And they pack this thing in there, And they run the output of it, which is usually, you know, just a couple of wires that with a speaker. And they run the output into this cheap little Japanese speaker, which is mounted in this fake case. And you turn it on and it plays, see. Well, sure, it's going to get broadcast. That's what it's built to do, this little transistor radio. Now, here you are. You're standing on a street corner. See, and this guy looks like he's got a lot of hot radio. See, he looks very furtive, which is what he wants to do. See, he gives you the impression, we just got this shipment, you know. A bunch of the guys knocked over a shipment out in Jersey, man. They got to get these radios in an hour. And obviously, you know, it's this 18-band FM, AM, shortwave, multiple diplex, suplex, duplex radio, see. And it's got a name that sounds suspiciously like a good manufacturer. Like it's a radio is called a Zenix. Z-E-N-I-X. It's got a name like that. Well, yeah, here you are. You're walking down the street, and he's selling them for, say, 1995. And they said, why, what are you talking about? This radio, in any of the stores, is a minimum of $89.95. And we're getting rid of these right now. And he'll park his car in the street, and he looks like he's got to get out real quick. You see these guys doing this stuff? Well, guys will come along and buy these radios. And, of course, they'll say, well, can I try it? And he says, well, yeah, go ahead, you can try it. So he turns it on, it plays. He gets Cousin Bruce, he comes booming out, you know. And so he switches to the other bands, and he gets nothing but a sound that goes, on any of the other bands. And I said, well, you can't get the shortwave AM FM down in the middle of the city. I mean, you get that out in the country. You get out, you know, you get it out of the city, and man, you're going to get AM FM. I said, okay, fine. 1995. And, bum, ba dum, bum. Well, now that's another one. And, this is one of the better ones. In fact, there's a lot of chicanery going on. One of the most fascinating ones is under the counter dealers in very exotic automobiles. Have you heard of this one? Well, you are approached by somebody who tells you he knows where he can get you, and don't mention anything about it, but you'll never get in any trouble. He knows where he can get you a Mercedes, something like that. It's a great car. And the car sells for $8,000-$9,000. He can get it for $5,000, say. And so he knows where this is, you know, you can do this. And you got to be, you know, you can't tell anybody about it. You got to do it. If you want it, you know, let's go, see. So a guy goes out and buys it. Now, there's a lot of flim-flams in connection with this. This is one particular one. And so he gets the car. And it acts kind of funny, and he has a little problems with it. And one day, he takes it in someplace. And, of course, they assure him, don't take it back to a Mercedes. You might get in trouble. Anyway, he keeps going back and forth until finally he finds a mechanic who looks at the thing and says, where the hell did you get this thing? He says, what do you mean? He says, well, for crying out loud, it doesn't have any Mercedes parts in it. So what they do is take out all the really valuable. It's usually a stolen car. It's been changed and one thing or another. But what they do is take out the really valuable Mercedes parts, like all kinds of shock absorbers, even in many cases the transmission stuff. It even gets so far as often the motor. It gets to the point where the car, and they put cheap stuff in there which has been adapted. Like, you know, like a 1937 set of Studebaker brakes. Yeah. So all you got is a Mercedes body, and you're driving around with a 53 Ford Galaxy. And they know the average guy can't tell a, you know, did you ever hear of that one? That's a goodie. And a lot of guys have been taking on that little fun item. And, of course, there's all kinds of other ones. The guy will come up to the door, you know, and he says, madam, and she says, yes, madam, I deal in appliances. I have an appliance. You've seen my place down there on Main Street. She says, yes, of course, the International Appliance Corporation. Yes, I've seen that. Well, look, I'm in trouble, madam, and I don't want this out, but I own that place, you see. And I have here... with me here in the car, I have two beautiful new, and don't mention anything, I have the two beautiful new Mixmasters, beautiful, Model 12. Now, you've seen it on television. And she says, yes, yes, of course I have. All right. He said, these are in sealed cartons. And they're brand new, and I'm in trouble. I frankly admit this, and I don't want the neighbors to know about it. I've heard that you're a person of very... discreet person. And I'll sell you this new Mixmaster for $15. Now, that's a 3750 model. It's in a sealed carton. Now, in fact, I'll show you the carton. In fact, I'll show you the model. So he goes out and he brings this Mixmaster out, say, and you look at it. And you say, oh, yeah. Gee, that is that the model? He says, yes, sir, here it is. He says, now I'll give you a brand new one in a sealed carton. And so the lady says, gee, that's great. Only $15? He says, don't say anything about it. And she's okay. And so she hands over the 15 bucks, and he's gone. And now she's got a sealed carton. Do I have to tell you when she opens it? She's liable to find it full of old apple cores, if she's lucky. As a matter of fact, usually she just finds a packed chock-a-block with folded up, packed newspapers. And it's sealed. It looks exactly like the real carton. You ever heard of that one? Oh, there's a lot of little trickies out there, friends. You don't think this is the real Shepherd talking to you tonight, do you? There ain't nothing real in the world, friend.
Shepherd from Friday, May 28th, 1971. And that's it for tonight's program. You can see more about the Dustbin of History on our Facebook page, which is called The Dustbin of History. You should visit it, follow it, like it, love it. Send me your comments right there. See illustrations, full cast lists of our programs, all in The Dustbin of History on Facebook. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. I'll be back next week with another edition of this program. Probably very similar. We have more Lost Gene Shepherd. We have four more episodes of Doctor Strange so far. Hopefully there are more. And, well, I don't know, Nightfall, who knows? Tune in and see, or keep checking that Facebook page, The Dustbin of History. And stay tuned right here, right now, to WBAI New York, for Emerson Unger with K-Wave USA. K-pop. Nothing but K-pop. Coming your way next here on WBAI New York.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Oh, I'm going to go clean the bathroom.